Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Everybody, welcome to Onceable, episode 83, where we'll be talking about Once Upon a Time, season 5, episode 13, Labor of Love. Wow, it's late.
I was waiting to see if you caught yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't going to say anything.
I was like, I'm reading it, reading the word. I'm Brittany, and tonight I am joined by Jen and Karen and Kristen. Hello, everybody. How are you doing?
Hi.
Hi. Good. Better now that the hail is gone. It was very scary around here.
Yes, it was.
I'm the only person who did not get any hail today, so feeling good about that.
We had it during the day. It was like ours was small though, and it was like very slushy and gross out. It was not okay. After our like 60, 70 degree weekend, we had hail and gross iciness today. It was awesome.
Rather disgusting out today. So we're going to try and hold all of our thoughts about the one major issue with this episode until the end. They may creep in throughout, but we're going to try to restrain ourselves. But just before we get started, if you want to get in contact with us, you can always comment on our posts on hypeable.com or tweet at us at Onceable. And I did look up something from last week because I was still really curious why Gold was going to the underworld with them. And it's because he is the only person who can summon the ship to go to the underworld. Also, what Kristen said, how they won't tell Belle that he's the Dark One again. So we have that going for us. And also, Belle, in real life, had her baby on Saturday.
I saw that, too, so.
Aww.
That's exciting. Now let's talk about this train wreck. I am going to kick it off and give it a thumbs down for this week, because if you separate out things, it was good, but there was one major glaring factor that just took the whole episode down with it. But I'm really interested to know if Karen is going to give it a thumbs up or thumbs down.
You know, I really was swinging back and forth. And initially, I was thinking that I was going to give it a thumbs up. And then I was like, no, I think thumb sideways is fair. But I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to give it a thumbs down. I didn't hate the episode. There were parts that I despised. There were parts that I really liked. Overall, though, I think it had so much potential and they wasted it. I think this could have been a much better episode and a much better story for the characters. And the fact that they didn't go there when I think they had plenty of opportunities to do so makes me sad. So I'm going to give it a thumbs down.
Oof. Kristen, what about you?
For me, it's a thumb sideways. There was enough in this episode for me to not hate it, for me to not give it a thumbs down. But I definitely had some issues as well, which we will get into. So, yeah, it's just sideways for me. It wasn't great. Wasn't terrible. Just kind of hanging in there.
And Jen, can you tip the scales?
I can't. I can, because I'm going to give it a thumbs down. I really didn't like it at all.
Oh, no.
Like, there was very little redeeming about it for me this week. I don't know. Maybe I wasn't in the mind frame to watch it. I don't know. But I definitely did not love it.
That's fair. It was a rare episode where you're just watching it and it's like, oh, I don't. It was just hit after hit of like, they could have done that better. But we were able to pull out some favorite quotes, at least. So I'll let Karen go first, because I know she tweeted about this and liked it a lot.
Yes. Yeah, we finally got Cruella back, which we were really missing in the premiere. And so she came back for this episode and it was really wonderful seeing her. Her personality is just, she doesn't mesh with anybody, and I think that's the best thing about her, is she's just like totally out there by herself and loves it that way. But she's talking about wanting to go back up to the real world, and she goes, oh, how I miss it. The music, the gin, the glamour, the gin. And it was such a Cruella line that I was like, yes, this is why I love you.
I was so happy when she came on screen. Actually, I was really happy when I saw Victoria Smurfit in the opening credit sequence. So I'm glad she's back for a little while. Jen, what was your favorite line?
Mine was from Regina when she says to Snow White, "You defeated me in a way no one thought was possible. You made me your friend by never giving up on me." And I thought that was kind of a nice Regina Snow moment. And of course, it's a nice comment, but at the same time, it's got that kind of Regina snark and wit into it. So it makes it kind of fun and sassy.
Yeah, they had a lot of interesting moments this episode in both the present and the past, actually. I like their relationship a lot more now, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. Kristen, what was your favorite line?
Mine comes from Regina, and it's when they show up at the Charming's apartment, which apparently is exactly the same in, you know, Underworld Storybrooke. And she says, "It's officially a cold day in hell when I move in with the Charmings." Yeah. It was just so lovely and so Regina. Love it, love it.
Yeah, my favorite line was the gin line. Also, Hades, like, cop-out when they were like, "Well, can you explain why this looks like Storybrooke?" And he's just like, "I have my reasons." And I was like, well, that's pretty lame. But I actually picked this one because I found a funny gift. I saw a gift set of this line and just started laughing hysterically, as all of these hosts can attest to. And so I was like, well, this has to be it. So it's when Snow and Regina are talking and Snow goes, "You took my kingdom, cast your curse. I lost my daughter for 28 years. And Regina is just like, "But did you die?" She's like, "Okay, I did all that. I get it. But you're like, you're still here. What's the big deal?"
Oh, Regina.
I know. It was just so funny. Like, I forgot about that line when it happened until I saw this gift set. And it was just like written in all caps. And I was like, all right. But now we're going to talk about Hercules. It happened. We're going to get through it together. Let's go to the beginning of the episode, though. So we open with a scene that was released earlier in the week, which is Hook waking up in the underworld and realizing that he has to go find Emma. But first, he's going to save this helpless, poor, tortured soul next to him, without even finding out her name or what she knows about this beast that's there, because Hook's really bad at getting information. He's just like, "You know what? I'm going to save you. You have to go find Emma. Don't give me any details about the world that I'm suddenly waking up in before you go." I was so frustrated about that. But the beast, as we know, is Cerberus, who is Hades' lovely pet with the three heads. I want to know what you guys thought of Cerberus, because I thought it was one of the finer achievements of Once Upon a Time CGI use. This is where the budget went. I'm sure it's all downhill from here. What did you guys think?
Agreed. Because we've seen some really ridiculous CGI from them, and I definitely thought it was one of the better ones. I didn't want to like groan in frustration at how bad it was. So that's a bonus.
This is why Hades can't have nice hair. But I kind of am okay with that. I thought it looked amazing when we saw the red eyes, and then we saw the two other pairs of red eyes. Aww. I definitely squealed. Like, yeah. I'm so embarrassed that Kristen is now aware of how crazy I got about this episode, in the good and the negative. But it was really cool to see it at the top of the episode, and then to like later on get the reveal of the whole beast. But they did a fantastic job making it look scary and heavy and real. And yeah, I really liked it.
I couldn't tell. I wonder if you guys could like get a better sense of this. I'm on the side that he did not know that Emma was there, but he trusted that Emma was there in the underworld. Like, I don't think he like fully comprehended that whole like spell thing that happened. But I think that he just like woke up and he's like, "I know she's going to come after me."
I thought he said she sent him a message.
See, right, because I think when he called, when she called him up at the grave, he just couldn't talk to her, but he knew she was there.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. And that he called that the message, like just seeing her and knowing she was there was enough for him.
You know, I think I spent too much time overanalyzing this scene for my post this week that I took that line to be, I have a message for Emma, not I got Emma's message, which is my own fault. And the whole internet is correct and I am wrong.
It's okay. That's fine.
Moving on. So Hook got out of the away from Cerberus, which was better than Megara was able to do in the random woods she found herself in. And I guess Hades was just like, all right, you got past my dog and now I'm going to take you prisoner. Which I really am glad that Hook and Hades are finally together, because when he woke up in that prison, I was half expecting Hades to, like, you know, poof down there and give Hook a hard time. But he didn't, and just left him to the dog. So I didn't, like, I guess Hades' endgame is changing as the story is changing, which we did learn in the final moments of the episode. Yeah, so Hades gets Hook in his little, like, you know, river den. I don't even know what to call that. I guess his, like, lair. It's just, like, a lot of colorful water.
Yeah.
I don't know. Someone did mention, though, that it's, like, there are five rivers in Greek mythology that all lead to the underworld. So I like Kristen's theory a lot better, that they go to the different universes, and that's how Once Upon a Time's adapting it. Yeah, but anyway, he has Hook down there, and he's kind of proposes a new plan. First, Hades wanted everyone out of the underworld. He's like, I don't like these living souls here. They're messing up the good thing I got going on. And Korra failed to get rid of Regina and everybody else. So now he has Hook down there and he's like, your friends don't want to leave? Fine. They can stay, but for every soul that they get rid of and help leave, you have to choose one of them to stay down here. And he kind of like sets up these like tombstones and gives him that wand that I think Zelina had at some point. It looked like that wand, right?
Was it a wand or a dagger?
I thought it was a wand. I don't know.
Okay.
I was just looking at stills from the episode because I saw they posted some new behind the scenes ones, like where, like, you know, they're all sitting on the green screen mat. And I'm like, how do these actors do this? Because it's like Hades' lair just has like a chair and everything else is green. But yeah, it looked like that wand that only Zelina could use from when they opened that portal to Oz, I think it was, when they got rid of her. It looked like that wand. So now they got rid of Hercules and Megara, and now Hades has to replace those souls, and he's making Hook choose from the wonderful group of people who have invited themselves to the underworld.
Which I volunteered Rumpel.
I did too.
As soon as this happened,
you volunteered
his
tribute immediately.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? Rumpel should be your first choice, Hook, which I would think it would be anyway, but you never know. And Karen laughed at me, so yeah.
I mean, in a good way, because I also vote Rumpel.
Yeah, vote him off the island. It's done.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
I think it's time.
Who you think his first choices would be, because I was thinking, okay, well, if we're on a mission to save everyone anyway, I would throw Snow and Charming down here. Just because then they're together. And I don't know if they're... the thing is, I don't know if they're going to know the difference. Like, I guess you feel... Oh, well, they'd have to get Graves. Yeah, so I guess they would know that they died.
Yeah, and Snow made it very clear that you only get a grave. Like, once you have a grave down there, it means you're down there.
Yeah. Oh, but then what about Neil? I did not think that through. I was just going for the, they'll be together forever, even in death. They already have an apartment.
Well, it's kind of odd that they have the apartment, because is it waiting for them to have unfinished business? Like, is that the assumption? That when they die, they'll have unfinished business?
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, there's just no possible way that these two, with their pasts, could die without unfinished business. So they're like, we're just going to reserve this two-bedroom suite in hell for you. You come down when you're done, and we'll sort out your issues.
Oh, goodness.
Like, we just know you're going to have issues. We're all ready for it.
Yeah, just I feel like the Once Upon a Time prepared writers just have, like, a wall of flashbacks they want to get to, and they're like, Well, if we can't get to them, we'll handle them in purgatory.
Why not?
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, but
goodness me.
I guess we're going to see a little bit more of what Hook's decision looks like next week, because we did see Rumpel finally facing off with Hades a little bit, which I think will be interesting. Hopefully Hook killed him, and then we can... Then Hook gets a little revenge out of it, and it's not so painful.
It's going to be a while, I think, kiddo.
Just kill the crocodile for a little bit. The rest of the episode is pretty much focused on looking for Hook. Emma and Regina went off into the woods with Robin and Henry, but quickly Robin and Henry went on their own mission, which we'll talk about in a bit. But I want to focus on Emma and Regina in that moment, because they're kind of like circling the woods and they find some like blood. I was like, whose blood is that? Because if Megara only made it that far by that time, like Hook clearly did not leave. Or maybe it was Megara's blood. I don't know whose blood it was, but
she didn't seem to be bleeding though.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
She was on her leg.
Oh, maybe. I honestly don't remember. Yeah, I don't remember either. She definitely could have been. Well, that would explain that. Because I was like, Hook did not get out that quickly. I mean, Emma's really, she's searching for any sign of life in the underworld to find a path to Hook. And if he was bleeding in that image, a logical conclusion would be that he's bleeding all over the forest. So, like, oh, a trail of blood, it's probably Hook's. But then we don't really meet up with them again until we're in the apartment and Cerberus comes and attacks. Emma didn't really have a lot of agency in this episode, which I guess is fair because we focused on Mary Margaret, who is no longer Mary Margaret, which I appreciate from a writing standpoint. Because writing Mary Margaret.
No more choosing names.
Every week instead of Snow was the most frustrating thing in the world. It's like Snow and David, just it flows so much better. But those two kind of changed their tune a little bit. Last week, we were kind of talking about how the mission was to go down and save Hook. And then it quickly turned to, we can save every single soul down here. We should, like, try to make this our mission. And then it kind of went to, actually, let's only look at the graves of people who can help us, and then we'll save them. So they found Hercules' grave, and we find out that Snow knew Hercules in a little bit of an intimate way in the Enchanted Forest. But I want to throw this over to Karen because I really want to know what your take on how they chose to portray Hercules' story in the Enchanted Forest was.
I feel like that's a big question that I could talk about for an hour, but I will try not to. Well, first of all, I actually really did like Hercules. I thought they did a great job. I was a little worried because he looked super young when we first saw, like, the promos of him and everything. But it ended up working out really great. And I liked his, like, floppy hair, boyish kind of, he's a hero, but he's still young kind of thing. And it worked out really well for the story. So he was, you know, smooth and kind, and he had a great heart, and he wasn't, you know, cocky or anything. So I think they did a really good job making him endearing. His story in the Enchanted Forest was frustrating. I really liked seeing young Snow back, but I didn't like how his story lacked Megara until the end. And even then, like, you know, in the underworld, he didn't even recognize her at first. And it was frustrating because I feel like this, I know they have to tie the story into somebody from Storybrooke because that's kind of the point. And Snow just knows a lot of people. That's fine. I actually loved the fact that he was the one that taught her how to fight and protect herself. It was a really cool way to bring that part of the story into it. But I just feel like they couldn't decide whether they wanted to do historical, mythological Hercules or Disney Hercules, because those are two very different things. If you haven't realized that yet, go read up what Hercules is really like, because it's tragic and terrible. And the fact that Meg was barely in there was just, I mean, this is kind of going to Meg now, but it was really, really disappointing.
See, I I didn't mind Hercules' story so much, but I think I really minded everything being connected to snow. And I think maybe it's because I do know some of Hercules' backstory, and it just felt really contrived in a lot of ways. And I think that's where my problem lied with this episode, was that it was very contrived and very, like, I don't know. It didn't have the flow like some of the other things do when they combine stories. This felt very purposefully done, and it looked really obvious. Like, it didn't have a nice, easy flow to the storytelling. And I think that's where my problem was. And with a lot of it, is that you didn't have Megara throughout the whole section. You didn't, you know, you had her like in glimpses as this little meek thing when that's not her deal at all, really. And so it just felt like there was a lot missing when you're playing with two very well-known characters.
Yeah, my biggest issue was it seemed like they had a setup for this to be where Herc and Meg like meet. Somehow, like, this is how they meet and their story continues, but their story doesn't seem like it's going to continue, but it's going to continue on Olympus. So it's like we got the beginning and the end of their story all at once. I would have loved this as here's where Herc and Meg like really meet, and she now has all of this confidence because throughout the episode, she kind of, you see her get a first taste of like being kind of a hero. And I thought it would have been a great jumping off point and be the beginning of their story. But it really wasn't. And that is, I think, what bugged me the most. I didn't mind the tie into Snow. It worked for me. I liked him being the one that trained her. But just it seemed like they didn't quite know what they wanted this story between Herc and Meg to be.
Yeah, I definitely think that I was happy with everything they were doing with Hercules. If they had announced that they were just bringing Hercules in, I don't think I would have had a problem with this story at all. I think I would have been like, okay, he's like realm hopping looking for Cerberus, because there's no way that Herc, like, you know, was a demigod living in the Enchanted Forest. Like, I just don't think that that's a thing. I think he came from another realm and just happened to make his way to the Enchanted Forest, sort of like how Brave is like, you know, that Scotland's just up in the corner of the Enchanted Forest somewhere. Olympus is just on the other side of Scotland. I really want a map of these.
Sounds plausible. I like it.
You want a map as much as you want a family tree.
I want a family tree, just, a timeline, and a map.
Oh, God.
First of all, it wouldn't be a line. It would like be a big knot.
Yeah,
I mean, let's face it. Those lines are just all over the place.
Yeah.
They can make me like a three-dimensional figure, like a 3D print it, you know?
The amazing. Other problem that I had with this is like, why did they have to make Snow and Hercules a love story? Maybe that's just me being the traditionalist that I am and not wanting to see Herc with anybody else, but trying to look at it objectively, what was the point to that?
Well, that's just it. There wasn't a point. And that's what, like, again, that's part of what bothered me. It just didn't make any sense. Like, it wasn't necessary.
And how much better would it have been if it was just totally platonic, totally like, here's a guy who found out how to be a hero and to be true to himself, passing that knowledge along to somebody else who's struggling. And that's it. That's all you have. It doesn't have to be this whole like, oh, I'm a guy, you're a girl, of course we're going to make out now kind of thing.
Right.
Okay. I liked it. And I even wrote, I was like, loved it, ship it. Karen, I believe, feels differently, but that's cool. I really liked it. And I think the reason that I liked it is because it was kind of, this guy came along and showed Snow how to find the confidence in herself, pick up on her weaknesses and turn them into her strengths without like downplaying anything she's feeling, and like just reminding her of all this like inner strength and like determination and good that she has in her. And I think that that's what Snow gravitated toward in David. And so I feel like this was the type of guy who was like a good influence on her life and someone that she connected with really well and was able to see that he had his own mission and she had her own mission. And she went off on hers and he didn't like, you know, say anything or like try to stop her and be like, come away with me, help me kill a dog. it'll be great. And she was like, no, I have my people. I'm going to stay here and rule. But then you have David come along and it's like, okay, great. He's there. He's willing to just work with her on her mission. And actually, David's a little bit more of a pushover than Hercules was at age, 12, he looks like. Which made him in Storybrooke look, or Underworld Storybrooke look like, I thought he was older, but he clearly died, like, right after he helped Snow. So I was like, oh, yep. You're still, like, 12. You're just dressed nicer, like an L.L. Bean catalog. Also, his boots had heels in this. I know that's like the stupidest detail, but it really bugged me when they were in the underworld. His boots had like, it was like they weren't like a solid straight heel. Like it had like a little cutout and it really bugged me. Besides the point, I liked them in the Enchanted Forest a lot. I thought that that whole storyline was fine. But like everyone was saying, my biggest gripe was that we knew that these characters were coming in for one episode. We knew that Herc and Meg were coming in together. And if they just didn't give us Meg at all, I think I would have been even more supportive of whatever happened with Hercules. But unfortunately, they did give us Meg. This story is one of those flashbacks that reflects in the present. Snow's reminded of how awesome she is and not just like this hope spewing machine. Like she actually can contribute to things. And it took a little more reminding than David and Regina kind of like beating the same drum. We need the snow from the Enchanted Forest. We need the snow from the Enchanted Forest. It's like, I don't need the snow from the Enchanted Forest anymore. I still am that person. And so she's kind of dropping her Storybrooke identity as Mary Margaret. And she just wants to go by Snow now. And I appreciate that. What do you guys think of that, like, kind of empowering moment that she had at the end there?
I tend to actually have problems with Snow's storyline. A lot of times, I don't necessarily bring it up all the time, but this has happened before where all of a sudden she's having an identity crisis and I don't know where it comes from. Like, they explain it well enough, but it kind of comes out of left field. And I feel like it's because the writers know their story with Regina and Emma are so strong that they kind of have to make up something for Snow and Charming. And given that they're Snow White and Prince Charming, clearly they're always going to be an integral part of the series and the overall story arc. But I always feel like it's like, wait, she was, you know, that was bothering her. When did that happen? When did that start? I always felt like she was Snow White. She's never felt any differently. And I didn't realize until this moment, until she tells us, that she was having those doubts about herself.
Well, when she had the whole doubting thing about her being a mother and trying to make peace with that, I could totally see it. Like, because she, you know, she did have Emma ripped away from her and she was, you know, she now is a new mother. Like, those are issues I totally saw. This episode, I understood where the flashback came from. Like, I didn't mind the flashback Snow having issues and finding strength. That all works. But tying it into the modern storyline didn't make it there for me. I like that Mary Margaret has chosen to be Snow, like, A, because going back and forth between Mary Margaret and Snow all the time was annoying, even for me, the viewer. But, like, her choosing the name Snow White, that's who I am, that's who I'm always going to be, is fine. It just somehow getting there in this episode didn't work for me.
Yeah, and I think, I wrote this in our notes, this is one of those once upon a time we have a guest spot to fill, meaning, like, guest spot meaning, like, you know, we're going to pull someone from a fairy tale or legend and throw them in here for the week. And then we need to come up with something to highlight another character to balance it out. So it's kind of like Once Upon a Time's version of a procedural episode. It's like, here are things. We're going to have flashback for half. We're going to have it reflecting something that's going on in the current storyline as well. And it's going to be one and done. It's not going to, like, you're going to forget about this whole thing in a few episodes because you're just not going to realize that they're calling her Snow, because to us, like Karen was saying, she's always been Snow. We don't need that kind of, like, big statement about it. But again, the writers don't really, they don't want to forget about the other characters, but I don't think that they know what to be doing with them, because you had Emma as the Dark One. That storyline is like huge. You have this really large overarching story for like four seasons with Regina, which has just been one of the best stories to watch. And now you have that same thing happening with Hook. And it's like, they have so much to focus on with those characters that, yeah, we're going to lose these characters for a while. For example, Henry, anyone remember that he's the author in his immediate family? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Nope, just Cruella, who's now going to utilize him to save everybody. It's great. Or save herself, really.
Yeah, but save herself.
And do you realize that the Quill is a living thing? So conveniently, it happens to be in hell. It's pretty awesome. It's residing in the underworld. That's just way too convenient.
Yeah, I feel like this episode was like, reminder, we have other characters.
I agree that it's convenient, but I also don't hate where they're going with this.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely think
it has potential.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I like anything that brings Henry, the author, back into the story, because I always thought that was really interesting. And like, I wanted more of that, and they just kind of dropped it. I knew they'd pick it up eventually, but it's just kind of been hanging out, waiting for everybody else to be done with their stuff.
Yeah. I was really excited about this, especially when Cruella had this, like, loaded gun basically in her back pocket, being like, hey, your mother when you leave here is a murderer, but if I come back, she's not. And I was like, that is smart. Like, look at you go. Like, my biggest problem, like we were talking about last week with Pan coming back, was the fact that he was just like, I just want to be alive again. Like, that's it. There was like, it's not like he was going to, like, you know, solve world hunger or, like, you know, fight disease or do anything redeeming in reality. And Cruella's probably not either, but she does have this little, like, caveat. Like, if she comes back, Emma's not a murderer anymore. What did you guys think of that? Like, I didn't think about that when she was, like, begging to come back. I was like, oh, this woman.
Yeah, no, it was well played on her part, definitely, because that's one thing that Henry will be willing to do, to write her back into the real world, because it saves his mother. It saves her from being trapped in the underworld at some point. You know what I mean? So I think that's a great way to manipulate Henry to get him to do what you want, because you now have played your ace. You know, you said, oh, well, your mother's, she killed me. It's all her fault. So you lay it on pretty thick, and that's a great way to get yourself out of the underworld.
I mean, can we just agree, though, that, like, that doesn't wipe away what Emma did? Like, she still killed somebody, even if that person comes back.
Agreed. No, I get it. I mean, so is there a loophole there or isn't there? Is Cruella just playing it this way to get her way, to get out of the underworld, and it won't actually benefit Emma at all? Or can Henry rewrite the past or the story?
I was going to say, I think it will help Henry to deal with it, and it'll probably help others. I don't think Emma will ever forget it. I don't think Emma will ever see it as, okay, I've been absolved, she's back, everything's fine. Like, I think Emma will always remember what she did and what lengths she went to, and I don't think it'll ever be something she can forget and put behind her.
I hope so, and that's fine. Like, that's a good part of her character. It shows that she's not perfect, so I'm okay with that. And if Cruella gets to come back, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, I really want Cruella back. Even if she just sticks around for this underworld stint, I'm in it. I love her character. I think she plays, Victoria Smurfitz plays her so well. And she's delightful. Yeah, I just really like her. But this makes me think, so the Quill, the sorcerer is not a helpful being, like most of the magical people we bring into this world. So he didn't, like, tell Henry anything about what to do with this pen or how it works or whatever it is. When the first thing I thought when Cruella was saying, like, just because, like, you broke it in half doesn't mean it's, like, gone forever. I was like, oh, good. Like, Henry has magic in him. Like, this is awesome. no, there's like literally a pen they need to go save in the underworld. Well, that's what
I mean, why not?
Yeah. Right? But does that, but because Henry sent the pen, this sounds so lame.
Does that mean he has unfinished business, is going to end up in the underworld too?
Like, I get that the pen's unfinished business is that it's not documenting the lives of the living. That's its purpose. It's not being fulfilled. It didn't do its job. But does that make Henry like a quasi murderer because he killed a pen? Like, I break crayons all the time when I color. Are they all floating in crayon purgatory and I have a lot to answer for?
Obviously. I don't know. It's a very different storyline right there. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping that like what they need to find is some sort of like, you know, magical object and not like ink floating around in a grave. Like, they don't have to go find the Quill grave and solve it, but
it would be so tiny and cute though.
It would be really adorable. Actually,
a little pencil box that it just is buried in,
like behind all the big people graves, they're like, is a magical object cemetery.
And it's a little casket.
Would the cup be there? The teacup?
The teacup be there too? Yeah. Oh, it could be in Gold Shop because the teacup was in Gold Shop.
It was in Gold Shop, I thought.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe it's like the land of the forgotten objects.
Objects.
That does not mean it doesn't have a grave, though.
That's very true. I really hope there's like a magical object cemetery.
That'd be amazing.
Oh, boy.
That'd be so cool. All right. Is there anything else we want to talk about in this episode before
the big thing? Yes, actually. I just want to talk a little more about Hades, because last time we saw him, we only got him for like 5 minutes at the end of the episode. Oh, so yeah. I kind of want to know what you guys think of him now that we've gotten a bit more.
I still need more. I know that sounds awful, but I do. I still need a little bit more. I don't like in any television show when a character needs to make it known that they're related to someone.
Oh, that was awful.
So him saying, like, him interacting with Hercules was just, I did not like that whole thing at all. Like, I was like, I could have done without that. Did like him disappearing in his flame cloud.
That was amazing. Cool. It was so beautiful.
Yeah. And then
Karen giggled. It was cute.
Thanks, Kristen.
You're welcome.
I like having Kristen and you around to tell on each other for what you do during episodes of things, because I think it just makes it more real. Like, you know, like, because I watch these episodes by myself.
You do exist in the real world.
Well, I mean, like, the reactions, like, in real time. Because, like, you could tweet about something, but, like, you know how, like, there are all of those, like, memes of, like, people writing like sobbing hysterically and it's just like a dead face, like, you know, like I'm not actually emoting anything. Like, hearing people like do respond out loud to things, I enjoy that.
I actually do have one that is embarrassing that I'll tell on myself before we get to talk about Hades a bit more, which is that when Regina said Wonder Boy, that's not her line.
I
probably launched myself out of the chair. And by probably, I mean definitely.
She did. She stomped across the living room and I paused it and then Hulu crashed and it was a whole big mess.
It was a whole thing.
Hulu crashed.
I feel like we missed an opportunity here to have this on video. I feel like, Kristen, that should have been your responsibility.
That's really funny because I don't feel like we lost that opportunity at all.
No, I definitely feel like we missed out on some things. Anyway.
Well, considering I don't want my reactions videotaped, I'm going to plead the fifth here.
Thanks.
Guys are no fun.
But back to Hades. Yes. I'm really enjoying him. I still want him to be a little more over the top, not like ridiculous, but just bigger. And he's not, and that's okay, because I do really like how the actor is portraying him. I think he feels dangerous, he feels smart, he's funny, he's mysterious, and yet like you, Brittany, I want more. I feel like there's more to come, and I hope he gets bigger and better and more dangerous, and I just really want to see what he can do.
I feel like we've seen him, like, minorly perturbed so far by these people who have infiltrated his domain, but I think some of the glory of Hades, especially in the Disney movie, is how angry he gets and how over the top his anger can be. And so I'm hoping that down the line here, we'll get some really intense emotion from him. Something will happen that will derail the whole, like, underworld project, and he'll lose his mind over it. Like, that's kind of what I'm hoping for.
And burst into blue flame. That would be awesome.
Exactly. Just
as long as they keep the head flame out of it.
His entire body can be blue flame, whatever, just not his hair.
That would be okay. Yeah, yeah, because the hair looks so tacky when it's just the hair. Like, when he did his little flame cloud thing and disappeared, that worked. It was all right.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the hair looks really bad.
I think I need a little bit more. Only, like Karen was saying, like, this week we definitely got a lot more, and I think that he was, like, so close to hitting what I wanted him to be in the final moments of this week's episode, but I just needed, like, 3 more minutes or, like, 1 more scene, and I would have felt okay. And he's getting, like, he's so close to being as, like, playfully funny evil as I want him to be, but I feel like he's just trying to figure out what everybody's, like, you know, weaknesses are, and I think maybe next week we might get that. But this situation is also a little too high stakes for him to start being funny now. Because, like, in the preview for... Did you guys watch the preview for next week? Because you watched it on Hulu.
Well, I actually have it up right here. Do you mind if I take 30 seconds?
No, go ahead. Because I want to talk about one thing that's going to happen from the preview.
I have watched the video.
Okay. Because as much as I want Hades to be that, like, playfully evil, I think dropping Hook into the River of Dead Souls is going to be a little too high stakes for that humor to come out.
But
so,
you never know, because he's just sassy enough to pull it off.
I hope so.
I mean,
so.
I understand what you're saying, but I think a little sass in that situation would go a long way.
Yeah.
I'm on Jen's side here, because remember when Meg was in the, like, the toilet thing, like, it flushes at the end, and Herc jumps in after her, and then he comes back up, and Hades is trying to schmooze and everything, and he just, like, punches him in the face and, like, caves his face in. I feel like that's sort of what they're going for. Like, Hades can totally be ridiculous, and Emma can be, like, the super serious one, and it could still mesh well. Like, even though it's high stakes, I think Hades, if he can pull off the Hades that we know in the movie, can really be over the top and still make it work in that scene.
Yeah, I really think that his moment to shine could come in one of two instances. The first being next week when he's dealing with Rumple, and mm-hmm. the second being mm-hmm. if him and Regina are alone in a room together. Which is a spin-off.
Both,
I would
both of
to
these
have that
will be.
Like, them just having fireside chats would be my ideal Once Upon a Time spinoff.
And she sends, like, gold flames, and then he sends blue flames, and then they fight over who gets to light the fire for the fireside chat.
See,
I like that.
It's already written. We just need to make it happen.
I thought it was interesting that the River of Souls is the green one.
Yeah.
Like, we've got all of these rivers, and one of them is black and quite, like, depressing, and I kind of sort of assumed that would be the River of Souls, but he's dangling over a giant green liquid river, so I'm assuming that has to be that.
Yeah, it did look actually as close to the movie as I was thinking that they'd go. I did not think that they were going to drop him in this early, but I guess you kind of, like, can't have the rest of the season with Hook and Emma being separated. Like, they're going to have to come together eventually. At least they'll see each other next week. IRL. All right, we have to talk about it. We tried to avoid it. It has to be discussed.
I'm just going to let Karen talk.
I'm just going to throw it to Karen and then chime in when I feel it, like it.
I don't want to take over the conversation, and also I might start yelling.
But we also have all been waiting for this. When I found out that you could not watch the episode when it was happening, I immediately stopped tweeting. And, like, I did. I was just like, well, I got to log out. And then waited anxiously staring at my Twitter timeline for you to be like, okay, watching the episode.
I live tweeted it mostly for you.
Yes. And I was at work like, here we go. All right, Karen.
All right.
Give it to us.
Okay. Deep breath. All right. I did not like any of Megara's storyline. She got a little bit better at the end, but I still hated it. That was not my Megara. That was not the Megara from the movie. And I think that that's what has me disappointed the most is that they turned her into this generic, bland character when the character from the movie, which they're clearly adapting from because we did get the purple dress for like a hot 3 seconds, was this kick-ass, badass, sassy character who used her wits and her sex appeal and kind of didn't care what her thought at first and just used all of that to be kind of like her own person, even though she was working for Hades the whole time. She didn't mind twisting that knife against Hades whenever she could. And in this episode of Once Upon a Time, she was nothing. Like, we didn't even get her name until the end, even though we all guessed, I'm sure, who she was. And it was frustrating because she's probably my favorite Disney character. And see, now I'm just running out of words because I'm thinking about it and I'm like, oh, it made me so mad. They could have done so many other things with her character. She could have worked with Hades throughout this episode, like even if it was against her volition. She could have been a lot more active of a participant. She could have not fainted at the end because that was weird. And I don't know. I hated it and I'm really mad.
My biggest frustration was that she was given like nothing. We don't know why she was running from Cerberus. We don't know how she was in those woods. We don't know what unfinished business she had that was keeping her in the underworld. We don't know if she was like a pawn set in Hercules's way and she had to pay for that. Like, I don't know what they were thinking when they put her there besides having her as, like, Megara. I mean, I knew that she was playing her because of the casting. So when she showed up in the sneak peek earlier this week, it was already like, oh, no. This cannot be. This is not the Megara we asked for. Like, just.
She had no personality.
None. She didn't even, like. I can't even form sentences because
I know.
So much to complain about, and it's just at the point where I wrote another article about it today, so I just like I am so exhausted about trying to justify why she was there because there is no reason. Like they're not going to revisit her. She's not like she. First of all, she can't go to Olympus. She is a human being.
Yep, I was angry about that too. And Karen never said anything, so I didn't bring it up. But I was like, hey guys, she can't go to Olympus.
That was the least of their transgressions in my mind. I was totally gonna let it pass because I was like, at least they're happy together.
Well, it doesn't make sense. She had no storyline. She had no reason to be there. None. There was no point. We could have had this same exact story without her in it, and it would have worked.
Mm-hmm. Well, except and if they really wanted to put Megara in the episode, then give us Megara. Like, there's right. no reason why she couldn't be the snarky Megara that we all know and love. Like, I could see her sitting across the way from Hook and being like, so, you know, maybe not call him Wonder Boy, but be like, sorry, Wonder Boy, you're stuck. I'm stuck. We're all stuck. Like, I can see her trading snaps back with him. Like, I can see her escaping and being this, you know, the same girl. I can see her having a hand to play in defeating Cerberus and being the snarky Meg we all know and love. I don't understand why they made her this weak sad, pathetic girl.
Yeah, they still could have had her meet Herc in the underworld. Like, she didn't have to know him beforehand. They could have worked that in.
But they had zero screen time together. And then, to top it all off, she, like, we don't even know why she was really in, like, the basement where Hook was being kept either, do we?
No.
Or did I somehow miss that? No. Like, there was no resolution to her storyline. It was just, she was there to be there, so she was, like, Herc's arm candy. I don't know. It doesn't make any
sense.
Yeah, she
got eaten. I'm assuming eaten.
Because he got eaten. So she got eaten. And that's the like, it just doesn't, it was such a pointless storyline. It doesn't make any sense. It didn't do anything to further the plot. It didn't do anything to enhance the plot. It was just there.
All that happened in her life that we know about through Once Upon a Time is that she failed to outrun a dog. And that's it. That was her
life. That's super exciting.
That's all we get.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get the point. Like, I understand if you want to have Hercules, you want to kind of have the balance of cast and have her too, because lots of people really like her. But you can't screw it up as badly as you did and think people are going to be okay with it. It just doesn't work that way.
There could have been so much potential for her and Hook to have this conversation of how if they kept Megara's story from Hercules, like, she gave up her soul to Hades to save someone she loved. That person stabbed her in the back. She could have had so many great comebacks being like, why on earth would this woman come down here and trade her soul for yours? Like, that's stupid. Been there, done that. Hello, we have a song tie-in right there.
Like, lost the soul for it.
Why did Once Upon a Time consult us for this? I just don't get it.
It makes me, like, this is making me hate it even more, but I'm honestly trying to be objective about this. And every way that I look at it, her storyline, even not as Megara, but even just as a person who happened to be down here, was bland and boring and empty. And like you said, they could have used parts from the movie and had her interact with Hades more and have her be this sort of like double agent that she was in the movie that would have made the story come together a lot more for all of the characters. Mm-hmm. And I don't get it. Like, maybe they just felt rushed to add her in because they only had one episode. But considering how long they're going to be in the underworld, or that, you know, they've already were there in the first episode, why couldn't they have thread her story throughout multiple episode arcs? And not that I would rather Megara be there instead of Korra, but, and I think it worked really well the way that they used Korra, but I also could see Megara kind of acting as that person who goes to Hades and is like, I tried my best. Can I have my soul back now? Because that's exactly what happened in the movie. And I don't get why they decided to chop it up as much as they did.
Yeah, they could play around with the way that they had Regina double agenting with the Queens of Darkness and the Hero Brigade like they did last season. But they have Megara being the poor damsel in distress that they rescued and took back to the loft and kept with them. And then you have this other side of Meg who comes out and she's dealing with Hades and she's like, I can't get Emma or Regina to leave or convince them that Hook's dead or whatever it is. Like, there was so much potential and they didn't use it. And it tainted the episode and it tainted the whole Hercules story arc, which is unfortunate because there could have been so much more and there wasn't. We still have Hades, and as Karen is pointing out, we could still have other guest appearances from Olympus. Do you have any in mind that you would like?
Gosh. Well, I would love season 6 to be a Greek gods-like season, or half a season, or, you know, I know we kind of want them to get away from those strict storylines where it's like, okay, you know, these first 12 episodes are about this land and then these 12 are about this land. But I think that it would be so interesting now that they kind of have a connection to Olympus that if they need help to call on Hercules and he could bring some of his buddies and we could have the Greek gods interacting with the characters, because that raises the stakes so much when you're dealing with gods and goddesses and their powers and their temperaments. It could end up being really interesting. I would love to see Zeus, just because he's so important to the Disney Hercules storyline. But I also really love Athena. She's my favorite, of course. And Artemis is also another really good one. But when you get into, like, the god of war and stuff, like Ares, I mean, now I'm just, like, imagining Percy Jackson. Percy Jackson has done all of this before, but...
I was totally waiting for you to mention Percy Jackson.
I know.
Because technically he is a part of Disney, so just saying.
I'm not going to go there. but I think that they could end up bringing something really new and different to Once Upon a Time if they decided to incorporate some of these stories and get these characters to interact with them. Because whoever would think that, you know, Snow White and Prince Charming and the Evil Queen could be like, hey, Zeus, we need a favor. And Zeus is like, I'll lend you my lightning bolt or something like that. So also, I really want to see Pegasus. We didn't even get a mention of him in this episode, even though we've gotten mention of Pegasus feathers in the past. And I just really want to see a cute Pegasus, although they probably don't have the budget for that right now.
And if I chime in, Karen knows I want a Pain and Panic. Like, I would love, like, a teenage Pain and Panic. Two younger kids who run around and are causing trouble on behalf of Hades and aren't necessarily geniuses about it. Like, I think it would be funny, and I think it would be a really fun way to incorporate them, but I doubt it'll ever happen.
Yeah, I think Hades needs some sort of sidekick. If it's not Meg, if it's not Pain and Panic, we need something down there to help him out.
Not a sidekick, but a minion. He needs more minions.
Yes.
True. Minions really do make everything better. You would think that they would know this by now.
Luckily, Disney does... Does Disney own Minions?
No,
they're Universal, thank goodness. So they can't bring them in. They can't bring them in. All I was hoping was that they can't bring them in.
That would be a no-no.
That would be terrible.
If Disney owned Minions, I would actually probably have stopped watching this show 3 seasons ago because they would have been already, like, taking over. Do we have anything else we want to comment on in this episode? I mean, we could do another 20 minutes on Meg, but I think we just need to let that...
Yeah,
let it die its death.
I would honestly like to know if any of our listeners enjoyed her story or can give us a reason for why they did this or anything, because I'm just really frustrated that they had this opportunity, that they pegged it as like, oh my gosh, Hercules and Megara are coming, and then it wasn't anything like the story that we were hoping for. Although I have to say, his sweet, like, metal belt thing that he... I want to own that. I want to own every single one of those coins that have the 12 labors on them. Like, please sell that at San Diego Comic-Con, because I will drop, like, $100 for that.
Yeah, that was cool. I mean, I liked how they incorporated it. I was a little... I know, we said... I just asked for final questions, but I have another bone to pick with this episode. This kid is, like, 12. And he's like, nope, I already completed 11 of my 12 labors. And I'm like, yeah, okay, Herc. Like, calm down. When did you start when you were 4?
So let's move on.
Like, when did you start this? Like, and how did you find all of those creatures and defeat them by yourself? Like, that was just unrealistic. Not that anything in this series is realistic, but that bugged me a little bit.
You have to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah, and I draw the line at completing the 12 labors before you're 12. All right, let's put this one to bed. Next week, we have the episode is called Devil's Due. We have Rumple and Hades finally squaring off against each other. They're going to make a deal, which we know they both love doing. We have Hook maybe possibly being thrown into the river Styx, I'm assuming that's what, if they call it that. We have a lot going on. Hopefully we'll get some Belle soon. I know she filmed before she had the baby, so maybe she'll come back. Who knows? I'd like to check in on Storybrooke eventually, see what's going on up there. What do you guys think? Do you think we'll ever go back to Storybrooke before we're done?
I was
going to
say, like, is Grumpy just running around town crying everything? Like, is that what's happening right now? Because I could go for that.
Maybe he's enjoying it because there are no monsters attacking with all the heroes elsewhere.
Yeah, I think he was like, listen, we don't get to do anything. Then he went to Camelot and he's like, listen, this is a lot of work. Gonna sit this one out.
Let us know when you need us. We'll just be hanging over here.
But also, what is going on with all the Camelot stuff? Are they still in Storybrooke? Like, are,
yeah,
like,
my memory doesn't go back that far.
Yeah,
no, I don't know. I
should probably rewatch some or skim some of last year's episode, because I feel like they didn't leave.
Like, would they go back to Storybrooke and it's now Camelot?
Like, that would be amazing.
they left it completely untouched for all this time. Like, they don't address it in the plot at all. And then they go back and it's Camelot. Just done.
Like a castle built in the woods. And they're like, everyone's like dressed in period garb again.
Oh, it'd be amazing.
Oh, that'd be great. All right, let's wrap this up. It's getting ridiculous. So until next week, I'm Brittany.
I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.